of the truth. Welcome to another exciting, even too exciting, episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the scrambling newsroom of free speech, because sometimes things happen and you want to know what's going on in real time, and it's not always that easy. It would be easier if you would just send the fundage, all right? Go to republicbroadcasting.org, send the fundage, click on the donate button. You know the address, 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664, and call it in, 1-800-724-2719, extension 3. Okay, we have with us Mark Collett. Mark, welcome to the show. What the heck are we going to talk about today?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think anything's happened this weekend. Quiet weekend. Nothing on the news. Watched a bit of Glastonbury, and that was about it, mate.
Yeah, I know. Nothing on the news. Well, it's all calm. Here's the thing. So there was the one thing I got out of this weekend was the realization that in terms of getting real time information on events in Russia, I am not so much there. I did renew my Telegram channel. I had a Telegram account before and I never used it, I guess they automatically delete themselves. They self-destruct within, you know, in 5 seconds. And so I got that going again. But, yeah, there was events going on, and I had trouble getting reliable information in real time. It's easy to get unreliable information in real time. All you have to do is turn on CNN, but that's all, so the Germans say. You know, and so I'm just sitting there thinking about, okay, well, what's the Russian economy been doing like? What's the direction of the war? What happened in 1991? What happened in 1993? What happened during the Cuban Missile Crisis? But, you know, that's all ancient history. I wanted to know what was going on now. But what did happen is there was a military mutiny. I think you could qualify it as some sort of attempted coup d'etat, and it was quelled, not brutally, it was quelled, I would say, very maturely, but there's going to be all sorts of implications and fallout over the coming days and weeks. So I'll kick it over to you, Mark. What are your initial thoughts?
Well, I was amazed, and I'm just going to come out the gate and say I was amazed. And I was amazed because I was just going to bed on the Friday night, and much later than usual, because Friday was like the day from hell for me. I streamed for about 5.5 hours, as well as putting out my own show on Friday. So I did an hour with David Duke. I did 2 hours with Ethan Ralph, and then about 2 hours and 20 minutes with the Ayatollah. So, and the two latter shows were basically back to back. The only time I had between them was to run downstairs to get another Red Bull. It was a 4 Red Bull day, that was. So that's a litre of Red Bull that went into my system to keep me going. And I was absolutely shattered. But as I was going to bed, I sort of checked the news channels, as I do. And because when you've had that much Red Bull and you've been doing a show, you're pretty wired. So I was like, well, I'm going to just check and see what's happening. So I checked to see what was happening. And lo and behold, there was talk of a mutiny or sort of a military coup in Russia. Now, all of the anti-Russian sort of Twitter people, tweeters, if you want to call them that, were all absolutely celebrating. They were saying sort of Prigozhin and his Wagner PMC were well on their way to Moscow, that this was it, Putin was about to be toppled. I was thinking, this has got to be rubbish. Now, at the time, I thought it was rubbish for good reason, because all of these accounts were sharing things which were notably fake to support this. So they were showing media of lots of people dancing in the street, which were taken years and years ago. It wasn't modern media. It was sort of very, very out of date media. And I was just thinking to myself, well, this is all notably rubbish. I don't believe this. You know, maybe Prigozhin has gone back from the front lines. Maybe they've had to pull back for some reason. You know, I don't know how PMCs operate. Maybe they've come back to rearm or to a changing of the guards, or he's been called back to Russia for some reason. But lo and behold, on Saturday morning, this appeared to be true. And the news coming out of Russia was, well, the news coming out of the Western media was that it was game over for Putin. And there was quite a lot of very, very salacious headlines. Now, I subscribe to a number of different Telegram channels about this. I subscribe to the Anti-NATO Coalition. I subscribe to Intel Slava Z. And I also supply, which you guys would call Z. And I also subscribe to a couple of other geopolitical sites which were commenting on this. Now, they were saying it was happening, but they were saying that it was happening in a very different way to what the Western media was saying. The Western media, especially people who write for the Daily Mail, people who are reporters for the BBC, and most notably from America, Anne Applebaum, were saying that this was going to be this huge coup, Putin was going to fall, and that there was going to be absolute regime change here, because Prigozhin was a hero now. The guy that they were calling an orc and a butcher and a maniac and basically calling a terrorist for maybe a year or more during this campaign, they were now saying this guy is, you know, he's a hero, he'd always been against this war, and that fundamentally he was going to free the world of Vladimir Putin. And I was thinking to myself, well, this is very, very strange. And the Western media to do this about turn, very like the Western media, but can you take any of this seriously? Now, over on the pro-Russian channels, it was a very different take. This was being played up as there was very little violence. The Russian armed forces weren't firing on Prigozhin, but Prigozhin wasn't firing on them either. That this was something of this was something being done to get Putin's attention, because Prigozhin wasn't apparently disloyal. He was actually just disaffected with other people within Putin's inner circle. So there was lots of different information coming out about this. But one thing I noticed was, despite this being very embarrassing for Putin, I've got to say, you know, I am not saying that this isn't embarrassing. I'm not saying that this was a great day for him. He will have been deeply embarrassed, shaken, and this has made him look slightly less strong in some ways. However, one thing it did prove immediately, and I mean immediately, is that aren't any fault lines in Putin's regime, or there doesn't appear to be, because his entire regime, including international leaders that are on good terms with him, all supported him and, you know, absolutely closed ranks around him. Even Erdogan in Turkey offered his support and offered to send troops to put down this rebellion. Now, why is this? And this is a little bit, we could talk about this more later, but I think that was because all of these leaders looked at this as a potential Western-backed sort of CIA-style coup, and that would be something they would all be very wary of themselves. So they would naturally speak out against this and think, well, if we help this guy, you know, other people might help us if this happens to us. So firstly, I thought that was very, very interesting. Now, the second thing I thought was very interesting is internally, everybody supported him. The Western media couldn't name a single person in Russia who was anti-Putin. Not one, other than Prigozhin, who they were saying was trying to seize power. In fact, you know, John Sweeney from the BBC said this was Putin's Ceausescu moment, where basically he was going to be swept aside and Prigozhin was going to take power in Russia, which obviously didn't happen.
Well, and by the way, Ceausescu was in was shot in the process. I don't know if John Sweeney was implying that or not.
Well, I'll tell you this as well. All of the pro-Russian side said, this is calm, this isn't something that's particularly abnormal in Russia for things like this to happen. And they said that no one was willing to open fire on each other. So this wasn't a coup. This was something different. They didn't know exactly what it was. But it didn't appear to be a coup because there wasn't, you know, there wasn't gunfire. There wasn't hot, you know, fire against each other. And one thing that backed that up is the Russian military were completely in support of Putin. And if Putin had wanted to, he could have absolutely blown Prigozhin's armored column, you know, into dust, because he could have used, you know, fighter bombers. He could have used strategic bombers. All of those things could have been used to destroy that column. He didn't do that. All he did was block some bridges, and he didn't order anyone to open fire or to fight back. It was as simple as that. So this seemed to be something to me that wasn't all it was being cracked up for. And later that was proved, because when Prigozhin left Rostov-Don, he left to cheers. As those troops returned to their fighting stations, they were absolute cheers from the people. So the people weren't booing. The people weren't like, oh no, come back, you're meant to be taking out the evil Putin. They were cheering Wagner returning to the front lines to fight in the Ukraine. So by the end of the day, although Putin, it had been an embarrassment for Putin and an unwelcome development, it seemed that there was two people with egg on their faces. Now, the first were the Western media. And I've said a lot now because we're going to go, and I don't want to talk about the second group that have egg on their face. But do you want to respond to what I've said? Because I don't want this to just be me speaking for an hour and a half. You know, obviously, that would be very disrespectful for you. But what do you think to what I've said? And have you got stuff to add to that?
Well, yeah. And so, obviously, it's not a great day. Regarding the embarrassment for Putin, I'm going to modify it a little bit and say it's the end of an embarrassment for Putin, because Prigozhin has been an embarrassment for Putin for months, and it's really been coming to a head these past 5 or 6 weeks. I think in early May, Prigozhin released this video where he was standing in front of a pile of corpses screaming at the camera and saying that he's not getting the ammunition he needs. So, I mean, and now Prigozhin is in exile in Belarus. And according to some sources, he's going to be on his way to Africa, whatever. So Prigozhin's out of the way. The Russian defense ministry had been trying to regain more direct control over Wagner. And I learned something over the past 24 hours that I had not known before, because I was not aware of Wagner until this war started. And then I was hearing about this private military group. But apparently this was not something that was founded by Prigozhin. It was something that was founded by the Russian, I guess you'd call it the intelligence services. And as a force that could be used overseas and potentially domestically, but with an arm's distance, with plausible deniability. Well, this is a private mercenary group. And so it was actually formed by the intelligence services, but if it's going to be portrayed as a mercenary group, then it has to have a CEO. And Prigozhin was a minor oligarch. I think he was referred to as Putin's chef. He had a catering company. Now, you know, catering, that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, birthday parties. The military, it's been said that an army marches on its stomach, right? And I think he'd done a lot of catering for the military. He was somebody who was known, and so he was a good person to use for this purpose. And and he wasn't somebody with a military background. So I think over the course of this this past 16 months of war in Ukraine, he probably developed a great deal of affection from at least some of his troops. And a lot of those troops were former prisoners who, you know, maybe he helped them get out of prison. He got them into a this fighting force, which is winning, which is, achieving hero status. And that probably got him the loyalty of at least a big hunk. But it's apparently he's gone to his head. I don't know I don't know exactly what his plan was. And you've got the New York Times or CNN is saying that American intelligence officials are saying that they knew of Prigozhin's plan at least a couple of weeks ago, but didn't want to get involved. Well, I think that's a very reckless thing. Even if they did know about it, I think it would be a very reckless thing to be talking about it, because if the Russians believed that there was American involvement in this plot, a plot to overthrow the government of Russia, and that could trigger all sorts of red lines. And if part of Russia's nuclear doctrine is that if the Russian state faces an existential threat, that can be a situation where they would use nuclear weapons. Now, right now, everything is calm, so I'm not expecting anything like that. But if and I haven't seen any evidence that the United States was involved in this, and at this point I tend to think they were not, because Russians are able to do things on their own without Americans holding their hands. And but more is going to come out. But that was one thought. The other thought, like I mentioned, I never was good at using Telegram in the first place. I was having trouble getting information. But one thing you said was some of the sources were saying that this type of thing happens in Russia a lot. Well, this type of thing happens, but it happens as part of the over the past 100 years or so, when there has been a transition of transition of leadership in Russia, it's almost always what would you call it, disorderly, if not chaotic. And so this type of thing, can lead to a transition of power, this type of thing. I thought that because Putin is so popular and things have actually been going very well, Prigozhin, even if he had 25,000 troops, and apparently he only had a few thousand with him, I didn't think that would be enough to topple him. But, you know, I do remember very well 1991, where Mikhail Gorbachev, who was in much more precarious position, but Mikhail Gorbachev was working out the last details of what was to be a new Union treaty that would transform the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics to the Union of Sovereign Socialist Republics, or something like that, the Union of Sovereign Republics. It would have transformed it from one union to another. And while he was at his private dacha, his vice president and seven other people forming the Gang of Eight attempted a coup. They ordered troops to surround the dacha, to cut the telephone lines, to cut off communications. So Gorbachev was out of contact, and then the vice president went on the TV and said that Gorbachev his health isn't well.
Do you truly want to stay out of the system? Are you prepared to buy into the biggest scam since the Iraqi dinar? If not, then put your money where it belongs, in your possession, not in the hands of an international MLM cartel. At Kettle Moraine Limited, we will provide you with the finest Swiss-minted detachable gram sheets of pure 24-karat gold for hundreds of dollars less than the so-called privately issued credit cards with elusive gold backing. Gold backing? The only gold that I want is in my back pocket, not backed by promises of an operation even the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is suspect of, giving a rating of C-. To get the full story, visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com and go to the Valcombe Bullion Vault. Once you have read the whole story about the scam being perpetrated on an unsuspecting public and how you can avoid being a victim by purchasing these beautiful, barterable, tradable sheets of gold at tremendous savings and in the strictest of privacy, be prepared to take the steps to protect your wealth with the purchase of the real deal. Detachable 50-gram gold bars from Kettle Moraine Limited by calling 602-799-8214. Ask about our 1-ounce Valcombe detachable bars, which break into 1/10-ounce bars. And don't forget, for all of your precious metal needs, whether buying or having the need to sell, call Kettle Moraine Limited. Remember, no dinar, no celery, and no carrots. If you buy from someone else, tell them you want AU, not BS. Call Kettle Moraine LTD today at 602-799-8214. Kettle Moraine LTD, 602-799-8214.
Here's some interesting news. Due to all the recent claims about possible nuclear wars, viruses, solar flares, and civil unrest, people are scrambling to prepare and stockpile food. But the one thing out of reach for many is an underground bunker. Until now. Because you can now have a 3D printed underground bunker in just one day. An excavator digs a hole in your backyard, and 3DBunkers.com shows up in a small truck and sets up their 3D printer under a tent completely undetected. They can print as many rooms as you want at a fraction of the cost compared to traditional metal bunkers. 3D Bunkers uses polymer concrete, which is 5 times stronger than regular cement. YouTube 3DBunkers.com and watch the video. The creators of 3D Bunkers is looking for a business partner that can help bring this technology to the world. And we need to protect our way of life without living in fear. Contact Brad at 3DBunkers.com for more details or visit 3DBunkers.com.
Surround the Dacha to cut the telephone lines, to cut off communications. So Gorbachev was out of contact. And then the vice president went on the TV and said that Gorbachev is his health isn't well, and so he's resigned. And so the Gennady Yanayev is the new president. Well, he looked drunk at the time when he was saying this. And initially, the army, because the defense minister and the chief of staff and the interior minister and the KGB guy, they were all part of this plot. And initially, the army was following their instructions, and they surrounded the various government buildings, including the building of the Russian Republic, which at the time was not independent. And Boris Yeltsin came out and challenged the tanks, and he just got on top of a tank and gave a speech, and the tanks did not fire. And within a few days, the tanks dispersed, and Gorbachev came back, but he didn't come back to a hero's welcome. That was a massive embarrassment for him, and the hero was Yeltsin, and it just led to Yeltsin replacing him. That's kind of long-winded, but I do remember that so well, and I remember at the time, in 1991, where do you get your up-to-date information? Well, I got it from Radio Moscow's shortwave service, and it had gone off the air. And then finally, after about 3 days, it came back on. I heard the theme song of Radio Moscow. It's Midnights in Moscow, which I'm going to be playing on this show, or the audience probably already heard it. And I felt all this great relief. But of course, the relief was short lived because you just went from coup to counter coup. I expect Putin to emerge from this in better control, Prigozhin, who has been a pain in the butt for him for months now, has been taken care of. The episode in its entirety, going back months with Prigozhin acting like this, has been an embarrassment. And so hopefully this is the end of the embarrassment. I'm going to stop talking because I want to hear more from you.
Well, the interesting thing, and this is what was reported on the Russian site, is that Prigozhin in total had about 25,000 troops. And those that were with him in this mutiny, or whatever you want to call it, numbered around 8,000. So I think whether this was a full mutiny, I don't know. And the way it was resolved peacefully suggests it wasn't. I think there's something more to all of this. And this has made, you know, Western superpowers and the Western media look really, really stupid. Because all of this sort of, you know, self-congratulatory, pat on the back, it's over for Putin, there's a full-on coup in the works. There wasn't. There wasn't a full-on coup in the works. And you can tell that because Prigozhin didn't do any fighting. He didn't capture anything of strategic importance. And he turned round when he was just over half of the way to Moscow. That's if he ever went to Moscow himself, or was he the whole time just coordinating things from Rostov-Don? I don't know. It looks to me as an attempt by Prigozhin to put his hands on Putin's shoulder and say, look, I want to win this war. I want it doing my way. I want my troops paid properly. And I want to have all the resources I need for my PMC. And I know that a lot of people have been pointing at Wagner and the PMCs as, you know, a really odd thing, or an odd, you know, an act of desperation to be using mercenary groups. But again, this is Western lies, because Blackwater have regularly operated in Iraq and the Middle East, and they are an American PMC. They're an American mercenary group, but people don't really like to talk about that. That's something that's very much been sort of swept under the carpet, because fundamentally Americans don't like to talk about using mercenaries when it's American money or American taxpayers' money paying for those mercenaries. Now, I do think it was embarrassing for Putin, but I think it was more embarrassing for the Western media, because I think the three outcomes for Putin are as follows. The first is that fundamentally Putin has come out of this looking basically like he's got more support than anyone suggested. And I think that a lot of people have been talking about him as if, you know, it's basically game over for him. But it seems that a lot of people are behind him. And not only are a lot of people behind him, but all his internal major appointments stayed behind him, and he maintained international support throughout this. So I do think that is very telling. Now, secondly, I think it shows that fundamentally the Russian people support Putin, and fundamentally the Russian people were happy to see Wagner return to the Ukraine. They were cheering the Ukrainians, cheering the Wagner PMC as they left to return to the Ukraine. Now, again, that is very, very interesting, and that goes against the Western narrative. And I think, finally, the Western media, the way they jumped all over this and the way they had to flip their narrative multiple times through the day as things unfolded, with one outlet calling Prigozhin and Wagner freedom fighters at the beginning of the day, but calling them terrorists at the end of the day.
Truth. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
The secret to aging like fine wine is in the vines. Ciroc grape seeds and skins contain high levels of flavonoids and resveratrol. Fermentation breaks these organic compounds down into smaller molecules, penetrating these therapeutic ingredients deeper into the skin, delivering faster and more effective results. Our handmade fermented skincare products are formulated with all natural ingredients and do not contain any phthalates or parabens. Similar products can cost as much as $180. At Natural Earth Medicine, we source our ingredients from local Arizona vineyards and cold process our oils to ensure that our customers receive the highest quality product in its purest form. Learn more at our website and try our fermented skincare products today. Visit naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. F*** you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show. Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Flip their narrative multiple times through the day as things unfolded, with one outlet calling Prigozhin and Wagner freedom fighters at the beginning of the day, but calling them terrorists at the end of the day, was very, very telling. And I think, again, that massively undermines Western media. And any free-thinking person looking at all this would have been scratching their heads. Now, how does this leave the Ukraine? And that's the next interesting question. And I think this was a massive negative for the Ukraine, especially for those fighting on the front lines in the Ukraine. And you might be thinking, why do I think that? Well, I think that because fundamentally, those Ukrainian troops would have woken up on Saturday morning and would have been given false hope by the Western media. There's going to be a coup. Putin's going to be ended. This is going to lead to absolute chaos on the front lines. Potentially a collapse of the complete collapse of the Russian front lines. Morale's going to be shot to pieces. Different commanders will be squabbling amongst each other. And I think this will have given the Ukrainian forces false hope. And there is nothing worse than false hope. And I'll give you an example. If somebody told you that you were going to serve 2 years in prison, well, you'd be serving 2 years in prison. You're locked up. But then if that person came to you and said, look, there's a very good chance here that you're going to get early release. You know, we're going to cut your sentence in half and you'll be out in a year. Now, that would give you real hope. You'd start to think, wow, even though it hadn't even though it wasn't a sealed deal, even though you hadn't been released yet, the thought of early release would give you major hope. Now, if that same person then came back to you a couple of days later and said, well, actually, that was all nonsense, there's no early release, you're serving your 2 years. Well, in a very real sense, you wouldn't be in any worse position than you were the day before. You're in jail, you were serving 2 years, you're still serving 2 years. But that hope that you were going to be released early, I believe that that hope, when taken away, would leave you feeling crushed. Even though, you know, the net effect of being told you were going to be released early, then that being taken away, would be to leave you in exactly the same position you were before, no better off, no worse off, because you're still serving the exact same time you thought you were going to before you heard that false news. The fact that you were lifted mentally and emotionally and then brought back down with a thump would leave you very demoralized. And I should imagine that people in the Ukraine were uplifted by this news, thought everything was fantastic, were in a position where they thought, hey, you know, this could be ending today. This could be ending tomorrow. You know, by the end of the weekend, Putin could be dead. There could be a new leadership in Russia, controlling the Russian Federation. There was reports coming out in the Western media that Prigozhin had said that the whole Ukrainian war had been justified on lies, that Putin had taken Russia to war on lies. This would have really got people's hopes up. And by the end of the day, those hopes would have been dashed even more so when they saw troops returning to the front line and being cheered by the Russian people, who seem to be completely backing the conflict. And I would say this, that would all be something which would have left those people completely crushed. And apparently throughout the day when all this was taking place, there were several troop movements from the Ukrainian side which were completely destroyed. So by the end of the day, pro-Russian sites like Intel Slava Z and the anti-NATO alliance were showing troops returning to the front line being cheered by Russians, but were also uploading drone footage showing Bradley tanks and Leopard tanks being completely destroyed by Russian forces. And what appeared to be complete armored columns that had tried to seize the day and were using this as a you know, precursor to sort of push forward even harder. You know, this was their time, and they were absolutely destroyed. They were wrecked. And I think this will leave the Ukrainians in a far worse position, you know, mentally. And, you know, if those reports, well, those reports are accurate, you could see it all happening in real time. You know, we'll see them mentally far worse off. And also now with, you know, even more bloody losses. I don't know what your take is on that perspective, Patrick.
So I know you're not the biggest Monty Python fan, but they had a skit 50 years ago. And that one of them was tied up. Maybe it was, I don't know which one was tied up. He was tied up. He was a prisoner. He was about to be executed. John Cleese was ahead of the execution. It was ahead of the firing squad. But Eric Idle, the shot kept switching to Eric Idle, who was running full speed, trying to get to the prison. And he's running. And maybe Graham Chapman was going to be executed, and he's sweating, and then they're raising their rifles. John Cleese is saying, "Ready, aim," and you hear the drumming, and finally Eric Idle just bursts in and he says, "I've got a message from the king," or from whoever. I've got a message, and so Graham Chapman's, oh, he's so relieved because he thinks his death sentence is going to be commuted. And John Cleese opens up the letter and looks at it. And he reads it. "Carry on with the execution." And, you know,
seen that one.
Yeah. And if anything, this isn't people with a 2 year sentence. These people, these troops, a lot of them really are facing an execution. I mean, so many are dying. They know so many are dying. They really are facing an execution. So it's kind of like that. You mentioned the Western media, and the Western media is, the fact that they have any credibility amongst anybody at this point is beyond me. They shouldn't have any credibility, but And I don't even bother with them. My main exposure to them is, I guess, when I open up my web browser, I get some sort of Microsoft news flash. And so on Saturday or whenever it was, I opened up my web browser and I see this headline. And the headline in its entirety was, "This proves how stupid Putin really is." That's not serious. That's completely not serious. If you're a serious news organization, even if you're anti-Putin, that's not a serious headline. But that's all it's been. And this is why, when I first saw something about a coup attempt against Putin, I dismissed it because I'd seen something, a month ago, about some freedom fighters in one of the other provinces that abuts Ukraine, freedom fighter armies that had been doing stuff. And I've been seeing for the past 2 years that Putin has, he's dying of cancer and all this stuff, and his generals are about to overthrow him. And it's just been all so ridiculous. Let's see. One point that's really important here is Prigozhin. In the midst of this, he did say that this Ukraine war, that he said that Putin was tricked into doing this war by lies told to him by Shoigu and the chief of staff, whose name slips my mind. Shoigu is the defense minister. And of course, Putin's a smart guy. He's not going to get tricked into anything. But if that's what and that was very odd. I mean, Prigozhin, whose hero status is based on exploits in a war, and now it's all of a sudden it's a war, he says, is not even a just war. It's a war that Russia actually is the aggressor, and the Ukraine and the Western countries really are the good guys. And so then you think, what was his plan? If he had, and it seems pretty harebrained to me. I don't know. Now, maybe he was under the impression that he was going to have the full support of the 25,000 strong Wagner group. Maybe he was under the impression that there were going to be elements of the Air Force or National Guard units that were going to immediately jump over to his side. And maybe, and I don't want to be speculating on this type of thing, but maybe he thought that, NATO, America, or whatever would do something to pin down Russian troops in Ukraine. I don't know what the plan was, but the thing is, if he made a public pronouncement that the war is basically an unjust war, then he is positioning himself as somebody that a new Russian leader that the West can negotiate with, but negotiate with. Dictate terms to? I mean, if you are taking over a country and you're saying the war that we have been fighting is an unjust war, isn't that a surrender, Mark? Or am I missing something?
I think, I don't speak Russian, so I don't know what the actual translation is. And that's I will say that Prigozhin has been two things to Putin. Firstly, the Western media have hailed him as the person who's got most things done over in the Ukraine. So they basically said that he's the man whose troops have fought the hardest, won the most ground, and taken the most key positions like Bakhmut. So he's been credited with a lot of things. But he's also been someone who seems to be the most unstable. So he'll make these, for want of a better term, sort of TikTok-style videos where he rants into a phone camera, looks absolutely deranged, and that isn't how a commander should behave. However, he clearly does have some degree of love from his own troops, because to get that many troops and that much armor rolling into Russia, and, you know, for all they knew, these guys thought that, hey, you know, we're doing this. There was always a chance that Putin would have said, right, you know, raise this armored column to the ground, you know, deploy, you know, five or six bombers and just destroy the whole thing. Now, he didn't. And there's obviously a degree of gambling here. Now, based on how this ended, I don't believe for a moment that that any of this was meant to end with Prigozhin taking power. Because if it was, well, it certainly doesn't look like it was anyway. Now, I think bearing all that in mind, Prigozhin's forces are obviously well-trained, well-armed, and they have been effective. However, his mental state does seem to have declined throughout the conflict. And at one point, because of his ethnicity, he is, he does have Jewish genealogy.
His father was Jewish. We don't know about his mother.
Yeah, because, there was two things. Firstly, his family history bothered me. But secondly, the fact he was running a mercenary group bothered me because mercenaries are people who are guns for hire. They go to the highest bidder. And for a while, I did worry that he would have, sided with Zelensky and NATO and was basically doing this for money, that he'd been bought and sold. Now, I don't believe that to be the case now. I don't believe that for a moment. I don't believe that's actually happened. I think that he's most likely wasn't getting what he wanted in some way and did this as a kind of very, very obvious protest. And to be fair, Putin dealt with it in the best way possible. There was no bloodshed. The military returned to their positions. And ultimately, at the end of the day, when it all concluded on Saturday evening, Russia appeared stronger than it did at the beginning of the day. So Putin, despite the embarrassment, did stop. And the people that were weakened the most were the Western media and probably Ukrainian morale. So overall, for him, it could have ended a lot worse. And if it does prevent further bloodshed, and it obviously did prevent any form of life on Russian soil, I should imagine Putin will be breathing a sigh of relief. I don't know how America will respond to this, but I should imagine that the American State Department will be completely furious about how this turned out.
Yeah, and I hope that they didn't have any hand in this, because that would be reckless beyond belief. And I, at this point, I don't think they did.
I think there will be something. Look, there's one thing we haven't discussed.
I don't want to be reckless and say I think that something. Just I don't want to speculate something, because it's such a serious thing.
No, but there is one thing we haven't discussed, Patrick.
Possible either way. But go ahead.
One thing we haven't discussed is Prigozhin initially justified this as a response to what he called a military attack by the Russian Federation upon his soldiers' position. So he justified the initial thing as, a response to what he claimed was basically an assassination attempt on Wagner, that PMC Wagner had was under attack by from the rear. They're his words, and I don't know whether there was an attack on PMC Wagner from the rear. Now, if there was it intentional or was it an innocent friendly fire incident? The fact of the matter is, the Americans are the kings of the friendly fire incidents. So friendly fire incidents do happen. That isn't something that would be completely, unheard of in any conflict. But it did interest me that that's what he said initially. Was there a friendly fire incident? Did somebody order a missile attack on Prigozhin's units as a preemptive strike to prevent something like this happening? And if there was a friendly fire incident on Prigozhin's units, was it a friendly fire incident or was it something made to look like a friendly fire incident? That's the one thing that hasn't been answered, and the one thing that's been that I haven't seen the media comment on since.
Yeah. And, the overthrow the Russian government with Putin being very popular in Russia, he knows that. As much as his own popularity went to his head, he must know that Putin's very popular. The economy in Russia is not collapsing. That the people are main for the most part united in the war effort. It's a massive military. He certainly how could he have thought that he would overthrow it with, say, 8,000 troops? Did he have a plan that involved 25,000 troops? Did he think that had he any indications or reasons to believe that he was going to get other Russian units to switch sides and join him? Had he been somehow led to believe one way or another, whether it was through his act of imagination or through actual communications, that he was going to get some sort of support from the West? And the reason I mentioned the Bay of Pigs earlier
. Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
His act of imagination or through actual communications, that he was going to get some sort of support from the West. And the reason I mentioned the Bay of Pigs earlier was the Bay of Pigs was an operation planned by the CIA to overthrow Fidel Castro in 1961, and it went into action, and it didn't go well initially, and then the CIA just pulled back. They pulled back and left the Bay of Pigs invaders out to dry. So I have no idea what went on, and I really don't want to speculate about. I mean, as much as I think Victoria Nuland's the most dangerous person in the world, and I don't put anything past her. I just don't want to speculate about it. I guess I just did. At this point, I haven't seen any real evidence for it. We're getting short on time. I want to make sure you have a chance to say anything that you need to say.
I can't imagine that all of this happened in a vacuum without any pressure from Western agencies. I just don't believe that for one minute. Mm-hmm. I believe that, you know, there will have been somewhere, you know, some form of meddling from Western agencies. There will have to be. And that's just because that's how things happen. However, I will say this. We don't know how much meddling there has been. And we don't know if there was a military strike or, you know, if he's made that up, or if there was a genuine accident, or if there was something, you know, a missile maybe fired from behind Russian lines that wasn't fired by the Russians, but was fired by the Ukrainians. We don't know what has gone on. But I should imagine there was some subterfuge, whether that by Western agencies or the Ukrainian military. I don't know, but I should imagine there will have been some smoke and mirrors or subterfuge behind the scenes that will have led to this taking place. Because I can't imagine for a minute that all of this will have just been, sort of basically legitimate. I just can't see that.
Right, right. Well, we'll keep an eye on it, and hopefully we'll get it figured out. I'm sure we will. We always do, don't we? But I want to thank you for joining me, Mark.
Well, thank you for having me on. It's been a great show. And, you know, I always enjoy starting my week here. And discussing this so quickly after the event was obviously very necessary. So thank you for having me on to do it.
Well, I'm glad that you were able to come on and do it. So thank you. Tomorrow, I'm not sure what I'm broadcasting tomorrow. I did record a show with Paul Stevenson on Thursday before any of this happened. And we spoke about Russia and Ukraine, and it's still relevant, but I might do it tomorrow. I might hold it back for the week, later in the week. But all right. And I will be back again one way or another tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.